The year is 1984, and director Hugh Hudson followed up his surprising Oscar-winning film Chariots of Fire with an intimate take on the Tarzan legend, where instead of the classic romance adventure story, we are taken on a journey of growth and discovery with our titular character, Lord Greystoke, aka Tarzan. The film stars Christopher Lambert as John Clayton. Orphaned in the jungles of Africa and raised by apes, it explores his dual identity as both a man raised in the wild and as an heir to a British aristocratic family. Unlike earlier versions that emphasize action and adventure, Greystoke takes a more serious, emotional approach, focusing on Tarzan's struggle to adapt to civilization and understanding his human heritage. The film features amazingly realistic portrayals of apes through groundbreaking makeup effects by Rick Baker, and for its strong performances, especially by Ralph Richardson and Annie McDowell. With a tone that is more tragic and introspective, Greystoke stands out as a thoughtful and visually striking adaptation of the Tarzan legend. This week on Back to the Balcony, we cover Greystoke, the legend of Tarzan, Lord of the Apes. Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert, two titans of cinematic review. Sometimes right, sometimes wrong, but always captivating. Your hosts Antonio of the Cult Worthy Cinema Podcast and Justin Henson of the Movie Wire are here to take you back to the balcony. And this film is one that I discovered on TBS or TNT in my youth, thinking that it was going to be a traditional Tarzan movie with Connor McLeod of the Clan McLeod as Tarzan. And instead, what you get is almost like this sprawling David Lean epic of a film that takes you from one environment to another. You spend an hour in the jungle watching this young boy be raised by apes and grow into Tarzan, and then you spend another hour of him being taken into his aristocratic British roots and essentially raised in Downton Abbey. Now, there is like this weird kind of, I'm going to say, divisive nature of this film where it almost feels like two complete different films, but somehow they work together. I personally don't mind it, but when I've shown this to some people, they just think it's a little too much. They almost feel like it's a mini-series that should have been six parts that just got shoved into one movie. So what I want to know is, how do you feel about this?
This was a first-time view for me, so I haven't seen this movie before, and
you got no skin in the game.
No skin in the game, and I even waited for the critics till after I was done. But to me, I loved the first half. I absolutely loved it, but my problem with it is, I don't think it goes far enough. In the second half, I think it could have gone further. What I loved about the visuals of this, especially by John Alcott and the cinematography, is this world. He creates this jungle that's just savage, and we see brilliant visuals of this vicious jungle of attacks, the wildlife. It doesn't hold back. But we miss the point of the savagery of humanity when we get into the second half, where it really doesn't know where it wants to go. It's almost like a missed opportunity, where it really doesn't go far enough in showing examples of how vicious humans can be, especially in that time frame that's kind of just shut out from civilization and the social classes that we have. It went too gentle, I would say, compared to what we got in the first half. But if I were to say, the first hour and 10 minutes specifically, that's the movie that I loved. And I think that's the movie I can rewatch over and over again, because there is a level of brilliance from the visuals to the music to just that beginning overture in the beginning to the performances. I think the first hour and 10 minutes is absolutely fantastic.
I completely agree with everything you're saying as someone who has not been brought up with this movie. I've watched this movie many times, and I've taken different things away from it. And I think one of the things that it's definitely trying to say is that the savagery that you are looking for, they don't show it on screen because they don't have to. They are showing that the subdued pretentiousness of aristocrats is more savage and destructive to the human nature than, let's say, trophy hunting and the scientific experiments that he discovers later on. It's this idea that this waspy aristocratic family, almost like Saltburn, thinks that they are better than everyone else. And here he is, the heir to the most wealthy estate in England. And he's a jungle man, and he growls, and he doesn't use silverware. Like, bringing in that, like, fish out of water, there are some comic moments to it, which I think are very cute. But I think that is the point, is that the savagery is in the clothing. The savagery is in the pretentious nature of these people, of the hierarchy of society. That's the way I look at it. And when I hear our critics have the same concerns that you do, I'm not saying that they're not valid concerns. I think I've just spent more time with this movie to recognize what it means to me. That doesn't mean I'm right. It's just what it means to me. This is an interesting thing because Hugh Hudson came out of nowhere. Out of nowhere, Chariots of Fire is like the surprise winning Oscar film about running, about racing, right? And 2 years later, he gets to make this. He has bigger budget. He's got more scope to play with. He's got jungle environments and then period piece. And on paper, this thing, like, it looks like it should work, right? Like, this thing should be a big box office hit. It's got the drama, it's got the action, it's got the apes, you know, same people that made our Gorillas in the Mist apes. Like, it looks great. It was a box office bomb, and essentially his career went nowhere after that. And he did I Dreamed of Africa with Kim Basinger and a few TV movies in between, and that was it. An Oscar-winning guy, right? So that is how serious this movie was to the success of his career, that it failed at the box office and destroyed his career. But this movie grew on cable, and it grew on video. And I think, I mean, I did see Highlander before this movie, so I was going to be like, okay, well, I like Christopher Lambert. I like Christopher Lambert in Mortal Kombat 2 and Fortress. Like, I like this dude. But this performance, I think, might be his best performance of all because he doesn't need dialogue. He doesn't need the language. It's all in the body language, the facial expressions, the animal savagery that he lets out when his instincts go wild again. And I think that is when the movie is at its best.
The movie is at its best. There is nothing wrong with any single performance here. The performances are solid. They're great. They're engulfing. Even when we get into the second half, that's the one thing that kept me going, is to see the performances as they went along. But the points that we have where we go into the symbolic nature of it, of showing the savagery and the visuals, I think that's what boils down to the issue I have with it, is that it banks solely on the visuals of it, because even when we get to the laboratory with the animals, the dinner scene, it's all very brief for a 2 hour and 20 minute movie. These conflicts just are never really explored, and we bank on the visuals, where in contrary, during the beginning of the movie, we had a collaboration of the cast with conflict, the danger that we have. We even have the scene with the grandfather that it could have expanded a little bit, where we see him wanting to slide down the stairs in a childlike manner on a silver tray, that we could have had a little bit more grow into that to show the innocence of the playfulness of it, of where Tarzan is coming from. So I think for the length of it, the pacing doesn't really work out, where we spend too much time on the visuals of look what I can do versus let me show you what this means. And we don't need hand-holding, but at the same time, we don't get enough to really have our minds explore this setting with the characters. We get the stereotypical dinner table where they're snooty, they're judgmental. We've seen it all before, especially when it comes to the era pieces that we got from the 70s and 80s. But this is where we have that element of Tarzan, where it seems too good to be true, where he mimics everything, he's doing good, but we don't see the progression of that. And our critics are going to touch on it, where it seems like it should have gone almost in the fantasy realm of romance, of the animalistic nature of man when it comes to discovering. There is the Annie McDowell scene where they're in the bedroom and he's discovering how to kiss for the first time. That was intriguing. That is good stuff that I wish we would have explored that more. So I think the direction that we got from the second half, it almost tells the audience, you know what this is. So we're just going to give you cliff notes and then you fill in the blanks. But it's so cliche that we don't even really need to fill in the blanks because it's just going through the motions. So I think that's where the filmmaking, and especially with Robert Towne, who I'm a big fan of with the writer, should have known better, to know to give some depth to the excitement of it. It's either going to be a romantic excitement, it's going to be a social message of excitement, but he can't decide what he wants to be. And during the last half of it, I was almost playing Phil Collins' soundtrack to the Disney music just to keep me entertained. So I think it was a misfire on what direction they wanted these characters to go.
And see, this is where, like, I harshly disagree, because I think that he's writing fourth dimensionally. What the movie really is about, it's not about Tarzan. And that's where we get into when the critics discuss of, like, how can you have a Tarzan movie where Tarzan doesn't do Tarzan things? What the movie is about, it is about this aristocracy envious of adventure. They don't hate this man because he's a wild child as much as they hate the notion of adventure. They feel like they have been so bred out of this desire for wildness and an adventurous lifestyle and animal instincts that it's all pinky fingers while you're sipping your tea and which fork do you use. They feel like anything below that is beneath them. And especially when you see some of the characters really take pleasure in the harm or death of animals, it's like, okay, we have conquered this wild side of us. And what Greystoke represents is this freedom that people think they want, but we want control. And so that is why we want to flush out this wildness from our ranks, because we are better than that. It is the traditional story of how societies are separated, that you have the aristocracy and then you have the peons and peasants. That is what I think this movie is about. And they're just using Tarzan as the vessel. Where that gets sticky is, how do you convince your audience to see a Tarzan movie where Tarzan's literally just a metaphor instead of an actual character that we all know and love? So as much as I love the execution, and that's what I believe the movie is about, I 100% understand why people would be disappointed in a Tarzan movie where Tarzan doesn't Tarzan.
Well, Tarzan's always been a symbol of not necessarily adventure. It's a subtext of that, but it's also a symbol of freedom, of what freedom means. And when we go into it, and we can see that again with the visuals of the moment where we have the grandfather dressing up, that he's putting on his shackles to do his bidding of his kingdom, if you will, to go into the motions of that. And when we have Tarzan come in and don't give any flying fuck about what people think of him, he's not wearing the traditional clothes. He's not going through the motions of it. They are jealous of the freedom. And when we get jealousy of freedom, or we get jealousy of free will, that's where it comes dominant. That's where dominance becomes a power play. And that's where we get the definition of bullies. And that's where we go into this ensemble that don't go further. They don't go further enough into the bully aspect of it, because that's where it should lead. That's the emotional aspect. Whenever you have freedom and you have a threat to freedom, that's where you go into that emotional reaction of human nature of, I need to dominate that. I am a higher power of that. And I think that kind of wrecks what Tarzan is all about in the original context. So I think when it comes to the overall message of it, it needed to be more clear on what direction and what message it wanted to be. So the Tarzan context of it, we see it respectful of the original material here, but we don't see it respectful when it comes to the original nature of what the original tale was trying to tell.
Well, I mean, and that's why I said, like, at 2 hours and 20 minutes, it's a long movie, but in all honesty, it needed more movie. It needed, okay, so now we're back in the jungle. now what, right? Like, there needs to be more. And I feel like that's where the animated version kind of takes care of it. You know what this movie actually reminded me a lot of, just better executed, is it reminded me a lot of The Bride, where we do have, like, the Frankenstein character learning how to be human, having a human person teaching him how to interact in society. And then when that friendship ends or leaves, it might be like the most heartbreaking moment of the movie. In this case, it's Ian Holm who is like, you know what? I can't do anything more for you because now you're with your family. But at the same time, like, there's an accountability that Ian Holm has of bringing him back into society, just as there was accountability for the dwarf in The Bride of trying to make the monster human and interact with humans. And then when those characters leave us, it is a very heartbreaking moment because it's like setting Henry and the Hendersons free in the woods. It's like, no, you have to go and do your own life now. That was a great moment. And I feel it all does kind of trickle down from there, but there should have been more to give us a satisfying ending. But maybe the fact that it's not satisfying is the point. Like, again, like, I love to put myself in loops when it comes to movies like this because I enjoy everything about it and I really don't have any complaints. But at that same time, I am not going to defend the fact that the movie isn't satisfying for other people watching it.
It's not a bad movie. I would watch it again, but I think it's too long-winded for its own good, with all the emotional elements being shortchanged to what we should feel by the time we finish the movie. I love the last couple of moments of the movie, but I don't love what led up to it to give me something that I should have felt more of. I should have felt more of an emotional impact. I should have felt McDowell, that one stare in that final shot. I should have felt something there, but the chemistry there, other than a sexual interaction and some classes that they give to just kind of fill, it didn't give me anything. And I felt like, based on what we got from the first hour of the movie, the big emotional impact that I did feel, I should have had a bigger impact. So the message that is trying to be landed, you either have to send a message to make me think about it to get emotional later, or make an impact by the time I'm done watching to say, crap, that hit hard. But this didn't do either one of those. And that's where I struggle with this. But holistically, the movie is fine. It is beautiful to look at. It's a journey. It's still a fantasy that I would love to take again, because even when we get the apes in the first one, that is memorable enough to say, how did they do that? And how did they do that so well to give me that emotional impact? Seeing arrows going through the apes, seeing Tarzan's emotional reaction to the death of his would-be mother or father. So these are all elements that do take me on a journey that I felt for even during the second half of the movie. It stayed with me. And that's what makes it a good rewatch, is that it still has elements to make it still feel good.
I think this is a movie that just gets better and better over time, because I think once the initial shock of like, oh, why isn't there more to his story, that wears off eventually, and then you just become immersed in it. And then it does become like your favorite Christopher Lambert role, because he's just so good in that role. And it is sad because he often gets mocked as just being a bad actor. It's not that he's a bad actor. He just didn't have good roles for the longest time. This was a really good role. And again, when you're a foreign actor, when your French is your first language, and then you get ridiculed for how you speak when you speak English, like, that's a thing that really destroys some actors' pride and ego, and they go back to their country and they just make direct video or TV stuff, you know, and that's kind of what happened with him. But this, I think, is a watermark for him in his career. We got to talk about Annie McDowell for a second, too. So this is her first film. She was cast based of just off of her looks, right? She didn't really have an audition. Then they shoot with her, and if anyone's heard Annie McDowell, she's got a very prominent Southern twang that even I'm sure if she tried to cover up, didn't work. So her role was totally dubbed over by Glenn Close. So it's Glenn Close's voice and Annie McDowell's performance. And I gotta tell you, man, it kind of works. So good job on Glenn Close for matching the lips on that one. But yeah, it barely makes a difference in that performance and that character. But then the side characters are so good. Ian Holm, one of his best performances. And I like Ian Holm in everything, but he is such a great character in this, like this kind of adoptive father and mentor, and then he lets him go, right? Heartbreaking. Ralph Richardson as the grandfather. Yeah, you know what? That moment, again, that's what this movie's about. Him seeing the childlike innocence of John, of Tarzan, makes him feel young again to a disastrous end. That's a heartbreaking moment as well. And then James Fox, who most people might know from the movie Performance with Mick Jagger, just bringing real smarmy, British, sinister vibes to the movie, doesn't even like make a menacing look. He can just keep that straight face and you just hate the guy, right? And that is like such what this movie is about. And the other character that I really wanted to call out too is Hilton McCray as Willie, who is like the simple-minded, speechless kind of chore boy that's around the estate. And that is who John Clayton, aka Tarzan, kind of bonds with, because to him, it's almost like he's with another ape. Like there's like this real kind of sweet brotherly love between the two of them. And I really love there's a scene where he defends him, you know, from people thinking that he's different or abusive. And it's just great. Like, I think those character moments in the movie are really what makes that movie shine out for me, that I do forgive the sluggish second half and, let's just say, unsatisfying resolution to the movie.
Well, I just want to forte Annie McDowell's performance here, because even though the lines are dubbed, and this is why I think her dialogue is so segmented, not in a bad way, but just brief in moments.
Out of necessity.
Yeah, because her body language alone, when you're having to focus on being dubbed and you're having a moment, and her body language is on point, from the dancing to the sensual moment to teaching. This is what I think people really drew themselves to McDowell, because there is something infectious on just how she moves. I can't remember a line in the movie from her, but I can picture the way she moved and interacted with the characters. And I think that is the biggest challenge to an actress or an actor when it comes down to it, is how you present yourself in your first role. And where do you stand? Where do you put your hands? Are you listening to where the director is telling you to go? Facial expressions, whatever it may be. And she absolutely nails it on this one. So I think, and if I had to picture a perfect Jane, it would be her. She absolutely nails it to an extent. It was a perfect Tarzan Jane mix. If I had to have a remake, yeah, even today, I'd say bring those two back, even though they're 70, 80 years old.
No, it feels great. And maybe that is why some people have some reservations of this movie. Where, like I said, the first half is David Lean's Tarzan. The second half is like Jane Austen's Tarzan, right? They're very different energies. And I think it's totally up to the viewer of, can they meld these two together and respect them as a single film? Well, that's our viewpoint, but let's hear what our critics had to say about this.
Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan, Lord of the Apes, and of all the 40 or more Tarzan movies that have been made over the years, this one has definitely got to be the most realistic. Of course, it's a total fantasy, but it's a totally realistic fantasy. It begins with a great sequence showing young Lord Greystoke orphaned and alone in the jungle, where he's adopted by a mother ape and raised as her child. That's Christopher Lambert, an unknown French actor, playing Tarzan. That's Andy McDowell as Jane, and she's soon going to fall in love with Tarzan. Although at no point in this movie, by the way, does the Lord of the Jungle ever say, "Me Tarzan, you Jane." I think that's because of the wonderfully logical reason that he hasn't read the novels about himself, and so neither he nor anybody else knows that his name is Tarzan. The best scenes in Greystoke are the early ones, where young Tarzan learns the ways of the jungle with a band of very convincing chimpanzees, some of them real animals, some of them men in really good uniforms. Later on, the movie seems to lose some of its dramatic tension, though. It's more about how Tarzan tries to fit into British society than about what a great action hero he is. But basically, I like the movie, although the first part, the jungle part, better than the part in Civilization.
So for a minute and 7 seconds, Roger talked about the film. And as we all know, if Roger takes his time in the initial setup, description, summarization, and then a blunt opinion of the movie, it means he likes it. You know, if he spends that much time on it, it means he likes it. like you, I think he wishes it was better. I think he wishes that there were moments that weren't so sluggish, that there was more resolution. But at the same time, I feel like he does kind of long for the old representation of Tarzan, with the jungle man speak, right? Like, and the swinging on vines. This isn't that movie. And it's hard to convince a fan of that style, of that particular intellectual property, to accept a change so drastic to that story as this one is.
You can always tell, too, with Gene that he's going to contradict Roger if he's just giggling in the background during his introduction within the first 15 seconds.
Right.
But at least Roger, I think, here acknowledges it, that we don't get the same thing, because he even says it in the review that we don't get the same me, Tarzan, you, Jane. So we set the bar of what we're about to get, because we could have gotten that. And honestly, I was expecting something cheesy like that in the beginning of him speaking English of a pure sentence after maybe the first 30 minutes of the movie. But we don't get that here. And that's what I, again, appreciate about the beginning is it's something as simplistic as mirror, razor, and we kind of grow from that, and it feels real. So I think Roger is excited about it because we do get that fantasy. There are some awe moments in the beginning, and he acknowledges that. So, but he doesn't recognize that this is, in my opinion, the same thing that we're going to get. And there is a level of disappointment, I think. But that's not a level of disappointment from the actual story, in my opinion. I think it's a level of disappointment, like I felt, that I feel this is going to lead to a stronger message. I think they're going to spend more time with this. I think they're going to grow the chemistry with the McDowell character. And then we're just kind of rushed through things with filler. So I think that's the level that I felt with Roger, is I felt the filler. I didn't feel the outcome.
And that's why I say, like, Jane Austen's Tarzan. Because if you ever watched, like, the BBC miniseries of Pride and Prejudice or Emma or Sense and Sensibility, this is what they feel like. And the whole idea of a spectacle film like that is you were supposed to be entranced by the costumes and the settings and the makeup and all the beautiful countryside, right? Like, it almost is trying to convince you that aristocracy is better than what your life is. And it focuses on that. And instead of getting back to the characters and getting back to their stories, it spends too much time with the window dressing, just like all those miniseries do. So that's why I said, like, this could have been or should have been a miniseries instead of a 2-hour and 20-minute movie that does have a less than satisfying conclusion. But like you said, Gene jumps in.
Yes, it is. And you know what? The jungle part still isn't even as good to me as the opening Dawn of the Man sequence in 2001, which manages in, I think, probably about 7 or 8 minutes, if that long in Stanley Kubrick's great film, to communicate everything that isn't done in the first maybe 45 minutes of this movie. And I felt sort of blah about the whole picture when it's a big production, and I really thought this would have carried me away. The second half of the picture isn't as well done as the Francois Truffaut film, The Wild Child, which was essentially the same story.
That is another Gene-ism. Be pretentious and throw allusions to films that are made by, let's say, better directors, more notable directors of classic film, and Gene always calls him out on it. And Roger always calls him out on it. But yeah, like, again, what is Gene going to say that Roger didn't already say? So he has to be snarky. He has to be smarmy. He has to kind of giggle through Roger's description. And that's exactly what happens here. There should be zero comparison to 2001. There should be zero comparison to Wild Child or any of that. This is its own thing. And I have not seen a live action movie with men in monkey suits have that much human connection with a human character in any film. Gorillas in the Mist is probably the only other one, but that one's more realistic because she's not actually a part of the tribe. She still has a lot of hesitation, but we're seeing maternal instincts and a real family unit and defense from jaguars and tigers and things like that. In the jungle, there are stakes here. And that's what I really enjoyed about that first half of the movie. You can't compare it to the 7-minute opening of 2001. I'm sorry. Different beast altogether.
They both have monkeys in it. Gene's
going
to
compare
it.
That's all he's going with. He's just going with the monkeys.
Well, it's like that with sci-fi alien movies. If it has an alien in it, it's E.T. It's whatever. Like,
if it's got a ghost in it, it's Ghostbusters.
100%. It's like, first, this one, he was judging for the first moment that ape came on screen. He's like, all right, this better hold up to Stanley Kubrick's opening scene of 2001. And then it's just disappointment because there's no way that in some sort your first statement in your review is, I wasn't intrigued, I wasn't taken away, I wasn't curious, because this setting will give you one of those three feelings walking into this movie, because there is, at bare minimum, a slight curiosity of what's going to happen, and the characters do a great job on the build. We know the story, but we're still curious about it. We don't care about how the monkeys are going to interact. We actually care how the humans are going to interact with this monkey. And I think this is where Gene was shut off of this movie right from the first 15, 20 minutes, is because it wasn't. And you can take it where you have those moments of silence with the human character and our apes, and you can maybe interweave that, but not really, into 2001. But this is a fantasy. It's not sci-fi. It's not thought-provoking. It's a pure fantasy, like Roger said. Just get engulfed with it and ignore all the other criteria behind you. So even though I don't think it was a fantastic movie, but I'm not going to sit there and go into this movie saying it's a 2001 Space Odyssey, because I know from the first 10 minutes, it's not going
to
be that.
And you don't put that much time and attention to detail into those costumes and the special effects to make something that's just going to get compared to something else. You do it to be groundbreaking. You do it to really invest the audience. And all these decades later, I'm still invested in these characters. And that's Rick Baker, man. He makes these things come to life. And he makes the faces and the performers in these things. And they were all acrobats and circus performers. They did a special kind of costume where the hand of the human could rest on little risers so it looked like they were walking on their knuckles. Like, that attention to detail really works. I'm bought in. I know the suspension of disbelief tells me that's a man in a suit, but the performances of the actors and then the body performances of these characters and that makeup, I'm in. I'm invested. And so even just that alone makes me say that this movie is better than these guys say it is. They conclude with this.
Here you've compared Tarzan to 2001 and a Truffaut film, so you're setting pretty high standards. I agree this film doesn't come up to those standards, right. But nevertheless, it is interesting in its own right, and I think it's really convincing when we see the little baby, as we saw at the beginning of the show, in the arms of that mother ape, whose name is Caliban.
All right, and I gave it a big awe at the beginning of the movie, and that's what, you know.
I think the real weak part of this film is that there's no place for it to go once he comes back to civilization, because it's only about the fact that he has come back to civilization.
They made a very big mistake.
There's no suspense. There's no problem or crisis that has to be solved.
And you know what it could have been? And you said it right there by responding to him growling in her ear. Make that love story the most potent thing in the film. And for some reason, you have a terrific young actress there, Anne McDowell. She was very exciting. They just backed away from the love story and went in the nature of the civilization thing and blew it, I think. What it could have been a terrific picture.
So here's my question for you. Like, we got to think about this is 1984. I still think that they are operating in the old school, old Hollywood three-act structure of a narrative script and what a movie should be, because they were all like that. It took new Hollywood directors like Robert Altman and John Cassavetes to create these character pieces that had no plot, that had no three-act structure, and they were critically, like, praised of being groundbreaking filmmakers because they took a step away from the norm. I feel this movie does that in the second half. I think what kills it is the fact that the first half is completely different. It does follow a traditional three-act narrative, and so when you blend the two together, it's discombobulated. But just the last half of the movie on its own, just being a character study, is fascinating. I think the biggest mistake is, let's say this shouldn't have been an origin story. We just enter, fade in, Tarzan is brought back to England, and then there's your movie. it'd have a different response because now it's about character and character development. There doesn't need to be a three-act structure. But because they give you the first half, that's what screws it up for someone like them who's looking for a traditional formula to how a movie's supposed to be made.
Well, Gene's going in and leaning into even what Roger said. He leaned into the McDowell relationship where he wanted more of that. Go into that because
he wanted the kiss at sunset, right? He wanted the sexual chemistry. And the whole point of that is that's not what this is.
And that was the norm in the 80s. As you go through the fantasy element, you're going to have a sexual fantasy. And I think that's what Gene, we've heard in reviews, that he wants a fantasy to lead to something sexual, of sexual chemistry or romance, if I were to make it more tame. And this is one where I think it should have gone the other direction, where it really did have a message to tell more in a more Forte-esque manner. But I think this is where the disappointment was, is it didn't follow that same formula and it didn't split to know which way it wanted to go. And that's where I think Gene is really confused. He had his movie that he wanted and he didn't like the fact that it steered away from the cliche sexual fantasy that we got from movies like this of Jane and Tarzan in the wild, the romance novels that took over the 80s. This is something that wasn't really clear on what it wanted to be. It gave us a taste and it didn't give Gene the taste that he wanted. And in some aspects, I can't disagree, but I'm not saying I wanted to go to the McDowell chemistry. I just wanted a clear direction on which one it wanted to go to and not land in the middle.
But I mean, this is me. How cool is it that Jane is not brought into the jungle as she is in the novel and all the other versions of this story? Instead, he goes to her. He is the stranger in her land as opposed to her being the stranger in his land. I love that paradigm shift because what those older Tarzan movies are about is they are about raw animal sexual magnetism between an aristocratic young woman and jungle man, right? And this is the opposite. It does something completely different. I'm gonna say it in like a really weird way that this, in a sense, is a more feminist Tarzan because it is essentially emasculating the Tarzan character by putting him into this aristocracy instead of him being able to be this masculine wild man protecting the poor, helpless Jane. It's not standard, but that paradigm shift to me is what makes this movie so cool.
And if I were to go back to that one scene where, if we were to take the romance element to it, where it is a scene that stands out and in memory that it should have gone further, to the discovery where McDowell does take dominance when it comes to their first kiss. And she's almost gently guiding him. They're almost figuring it out, understanding that this is his first kiss, his first human reaction. That's where I think we would have gotten more in discovery to really build that chemistry or that wonder. You have this adult man coming out of the jungle. How does he adapt? How does he know? Is it the human manly nature or is it the female dominant piece of it that's showing him and guiding him how to socialize with a female? So I think there is a little bit of discovery that it was too cliche, too straightforward. And I would have loved to see a little bit more of that because I think that's where this movie was going in the right direction if I were to see it through Gene's eyes, but we needed more of that. And I think that's the message of the back half of the movie. Is we lose that discovery that I spoke to in the beginning where we have something simplistic as learning the words of mirror or razor. And this is something where we have a human touch, a human element that's a lot more complicated, but it's treated so simplistic.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you right now, this movie plays better to today's audience. What with like this whole men matter and red pill movement and women are shit movement. I get it. He's like, you know what? Fuck you guys. You shot my monkey dad. Fuck you, Jane. I'm going back to the jungle where shit's like safe.
I'm done with this
shit. Y'all are crazy, right? I'm going to go back and fight jaguars. That is literally what today's male masculine men matter movement is I'm going to go back to the jungle because the streets are wild. I digress. When it comes to Gene's opinion of this movie, I don't like it. I think that my least favorite Gene is this Gene, the pretentious, sarcastic, and snobby Gene that cannot give you a solid answer or good discourse of why he doesn't care for this movie or what its opportunities are. Instead, he just name drops other movies and other filmmakers that this did not meet the level that he thought those guys met. And for that, I'm giving him, for 2 weeks in a row, another D.
Wow. When it comes to Roger, I think I love it when he goes on the minute rant of positivity on a movie. I love when he gets excited and he goes into great details of what to expect. In contrary to what we got last week, he really does show you what to expect and to really get engulfed into this fantasy. So, and I can't disagree that he had the same dislikes that I did, but I wish he would have gone more into the dislikes in the second half in detail, because I couldn't find a written review for this movie with him.
Right, but he still suggested it. Like,
he did.
That's the thing about Roger that Gene doesn't do, is that Roger will paint out in very clear words and descriptions what he thinks the movie needed to be a better movie than it was. Not that it's just a bad movie. If it's a bad movie, he's like, I can't help this movie, so I'm not going to. Thumbs down, right? But when he spends this much time on a movie and says what he would have loved to see to make it better, it does mean that he liked it enough to want it to be better. And I feel that is like a piece of criticism that a lot of people overlook, is the salty, spicy content of how much you hate something isn't as impactful as you saying how much better you wanted something that's already pretty good to be.
Well, even nails all the elements of what to look for when it comes to the technical aspects, the fantasy element, the not the typical tropes that we've gotten from previous Tarzan films. So he sets the tone for it. So I think it was a very solid Roger review. One, I think it was a solid 3.5 stars on him.
I agree. Like, even though I don't agree with him on the things that he didn't like, I understand them. But I like the fact that he wants it to be better because he liked what he saw. I will always respect that more than whatever this pretentious name dropping and comparing to other films is. That's not journalism. That's not criticism. That is the dude in the lobby of the theater that you don't want to talk to who thinks he knows everything. But yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I'm glad that this was a film. I didn't know this was one that you hadn't seen before. And I'm really glad that you liked what you saw. And just like Roger, what you wanted it to be better to make it a better film for you. But I think there's a lot of good in this movie. There's more good than bad. And just like Yanks, it looks better and plays better than it actually is in content and in subtext and subject. It's just, it's a well-made movie. It might not just be that great of a movie for most audiences. So cool.
This is one that I would recommend, honestly, and it starts on a high note and some will enjoy the second half, but I think it's worth seeing even just if you saw the first half. It's technically a well-done movie and a well-acted movie. It's worth seeing just for that.
And we're going to up our game next week because, hey, if we're talking about haute cinema, well, next week's pick is definitely that. Just is bringing to the show The Great Outdoors, starring John Candy and Dan Aykroyd. One of my favorite theater experiences. I can't wait to talk about that. So join us for that. We are getting out of the dramas and we are going into the comedies. And then after that, we're going to have a special guest. We're doing Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, with a very special guest. We'll announce that next week. But yeah, we got a lot of great stuff coming up. So please rate, like, review, give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Give us all the stars you can on Spotify, and please subscribe and leave a review for us on YouTube. You can find me, Antonio, of the Cult Worthy Cinema Podcast over at thecultworthy.com, and you can find my co-host, Justin Henson, over at
themoviewire.com,
and I'll see you next week.
See you next week.